Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I'm your host, Clayton Fletcher, here in New York, but not for long. I'm packing my bags, and in just a few days, I will be leaving for Las Vegas, where I will be playing in the Wynn Signature Series tournaments, January 22nd, 23rd, 24th. There's a bunch of fun tournaments that are kind of right in the middle of my price point, right around $1,000 main event. And then I think there are a couple of $500 side events. So I'm excited to play. I haven't been playing as much live as I would like. And I'm just excited to get back onto the felt. I've been studying TPE videos. Like as I mentioned last time around, I'm absolutely obsessed with the Andrew Brokus series called Summer Study. I highly recommend that you guys check that one out as well. The following week, January 27th through February 2nd, I will actually be performing at the MGM at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club. So I hope that some of you can come out and check out a comedy show. The shows are at 8 o'clock every night, so if you are playing in any tournaments that week, I know there's a big series at the Venetian, a couple other things going on around town. If you do well in any of those events, you won't be able to attend the show. And also, I won't be able to play in any tournaments during that week because of the 10 o'clock start time. But if you have a free night and you want to come check out some comedy, I would love to see you in the audience and maybe speak with you after the show or whatever. So come on by. I think it's bradgarrettscomedy.com for tickets. And I hope to see some of you there. All right, so I want to start off this week by updating my favorite cheater of all time, Mike Postol. I still don't know if it's Postol or Postol. Either way, it's looking increasingly like he's guilty as charged. I shouldn't laugh because this is pretty serious. They tried to serve him a summons to appear in court, and he was inside his house hiding. So, according to the attorney for the plaintiffs, and there are over 100 plaintiffs now in this case. Mac Verstandig, who is an attorney that I've actually met on several occasions, very well-respected, upstanding guy. He's a Las Vegas-based attorney who actually specializes in gambling cases. So he is representing Veronica Brill and all of the other, it's basically a class action at this point, all of the players against whom Postol may have cheated and evidently won well over $200,000 doing so. Anyway, Verstandig claims that he personally went to the home of Mike Postol and saw that there were lights on inside, rang the doorbell and observed someone inside the house running upstairs. And that person appeared to fit the description of Mike Postol. So he's actually running. The doorbell rings and his first reaction is to run up the stairs. Now, I don't know whether, in fact, the person at the home was Mike Postol. I can't even prove that Verstandig was at the correct address. But just this image to me as a comedian is too funny, that here you are, the much maligned, most notorious live stream cheater, blatantly cheating, apparently, allegedly. And now when they come to your house to serve you papers, you run up the stairs and don't answer the door. So, I mean, obviously, in a case like this, Verstandig, just being an attorney, not the police, he doesn't have a search warrant. he doesn't have any right to enter the man's home. But under the law, he actually has been served. Or at least that's what Verstandig is arguing in recently filed court documents. So we haven't updated this case in a while. I know all the poker podcasts and blogs had a great time with it right when it first happened. I don't want to forget about it. I'm very interested in the outcome. I hope that if it is proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Postle is guilty of that. Look, I want him to pay the biggest price for this. I think there needs to be very strong justice against anyone who is caught cheating at poker or really any casino gambling game, whether it's the house or the players. I don't believe that cheating should be something we're worried about. There's so much to worry about while you're playing. The last thing you should have on your mind is whether the game is on the up and up. So, and that's why we pay rake, and that's why we trust these casinos to not allow something like this to happen. And in the case of Stone's Gambling Hall, allegedly have insiders within their four walls actually being a part of it. So if that's all happening, I hope that justice is served and that it's very strong and swift. It can't be too swift as long as people keep hiding when the attorneys show up to their homes. But sooner or later, this will move to the next phase. So that's that. I also wanted to mention that the World Series of Poker schedule for 2020 is becoming clearer. Just the other day, they released the full schedule of basically what they decided to call, on Twitter at least, their value menu, which I guess is what they're calling the lower stakes buy-ins. Look, now this is cute. It got people talking. I can't imagine being offended by someone using the terminology value menu, but in this day and age, everyone needs to be offended by everything. So somehow this became something that everyone on Twitter, on poker Twitter, which is kind of notoriously, shall we say, catty, I guess. Everyone talking about, you know, how can they call it a value menu? If I spend $1,000 on a tournament, that's not a value menu. And can I get fries with that? And all this kind of stuff. But they're just saying that they've released the smaller stakes buy-ins for the grinders, for the weekend warriors, for the people that don't have, you know, $500,000, $2 million, $3 million in their bankrolls. The World Series of Poker in recent years has done a terrific job of being more, inclusive of players of all bankrolls. So basically, if you have money to play cards with, you should go to Vegas in the summer. I say that every year, and I'm not paid by the World Series of Poker. I'm not a fan of Caesars Entertainment, especially when I was burglarized in one of their properties. Had to make sure I throw that in, lest we forget. But still, there is nothing on earth quite like the WSOP, and the schedule looks good. I mean, it's starting with the casino employees event on May 27th, and then they're bringing back last year's very popular Big 50. This isn't the 50th annual WSOP, but it is the 50th anniversary of the first WSOP, so I guess they can still call it Big 50 if they want to. It's a $500 buy-in. I'm hoping that, like last year, the first buy-in will be rake-free. I haven't seen that in any of the publicity that's gone out about this. Let's wait and see about that. But either way, it should be good value in terms of the level of competition. This is the one of the lowest priced bracelets. So it might be worthwhile if you're considering taking a trip, maybe playing in that event. And then if you can stick around a few days, the Millionaire Maker is going to be a little earlier than usual this year. It's June 5th and 6th, two starting days. So that's a $1,500 buy-in with a $1 million guarantee for first place. So that's nice. The following weekend, the Monster Stack, and then on and on and on. No, there's a double stack. The tag team this year is only going to be two-person teams. So unlike previous years where you could have up to four players in your team, this year it's going to be two people per team. The Colossus is the weekend of June 24th and 25th. Actually, I don't know if that's a weekend because I think the weekend is actually June 26th and 27th, which is going to be one of my favorite events, Crazy Eights. I like it because it's a small stakes, relatively small stakes, $888 buy-in. But what I love about this tournament is the $888,888 guarantee for first place. And of course, eight-handed tables, which, you know, in this day and age where it seems like players are getting fatter and fatter, it's nice to be able to stretch my legs out just a little bit at an eight-handed table. You guys know how I feel about 10-handed being the nut low. They're bringing back the mini main event this year on June 29th. And then the main event itself, the $10,000 main event, beginning July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Followed by the little one for one drop, weekend of July 4th, which is great. The 4th of July weekend being the charity event. That's always good. Unlimited re-entries for that. It's a $1,000 buy-in with a $111 rake that goes directly to the One Drop Foundation. And then they're bringing back the closer July 10th and 11th. So that's a look at the schedule. I'll probably play almost every event that I just named. I expect to play more tournaments this summer than I ever have before. There are a lot of reasons for that. I have a lot of poker goals this year. A lot of them are tournament-based. I mentioned a few weeks ago, I want to play at least 42. That's my magic number this year. I'm hoping I can get at least 25 of those 32 this summer. So if you are participating in a fantasy draft and you're just looking for someone that you know is going to play a lot of events, you might want to spend your free agent dollars on me. I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to win any bracelets or make any final tables. I'm surely going to try. But just, you know, I promise that I will give you plenty of volume if you're in one of the fantasy drafts where they only count World Series events, because I expect to be spending more time at the Rio this summer playing in these events as opposed to trouncing around all over Vegas looking for value elsewhere. I'm not impressed with Planet Hollywood. I'm trying not to support the Venetian as much as possible. And yeah, the only other place that I would like to play is at the Wynn. And honestly, they just don't have that many big buy-in events there. So not saying I'll never be at Planet Hollywood or I will totally avoid the Venetian. Sometimes there's just nothing else to play. And those are the options that make the most sense to me. But I do expect to spend more time at the Rio this summer. So I hope to see many of you there. Please don't be shy. Last year, a few of you kind of like got coy with me and like waited till I busted out and said, hey, by the way, are you Clayton? You know, I don't really think that you're giving up much equity if you just tell me that you're a podcast listener, if you happen to recognize me at the table, you know, or for that matter, if you're going to be playing at the Wynn next week, why don't you send me a tweet right now and let me know? Maybe we can say hello to each other. I'd love to meet any and all of you. So at Clayton Comic on Twitter, and just let me know that you are going to be where I'm going to be. I'd love to say hello. I do see the value, by the way, of you not wanting to let me know that you are serious enough about poker to listen to a podcast about poker, and that you might have an edge. You think you might have an edge if I think you might not be as serious about poker as you are, and that you know about Tournament Poker Edge and all that stuff. But look, let's just be friendly and say hello. And whatever little bit of equity that costs you, I think is probably worth it in life equity, just of being able to maybe have a fun conversation at the table with one of your opponents. All right, so looking forward to eating off the value menu, as I'm sure many of you will be as well. For the rest of this episode, I'd like to continue our review of last year's World Series of Poker main event. This is the $10,000 main event from July of 2019. We're still on day six here. I thought there were a lot of very interesting hands on day six. I think day five and day six are probably the most intriguing days of that tournament for me. You start to get a feel for which players are serious about trying to win the tournament and which ones are just staring at that pay jump schedule and trying to win a few thousand dollars more. Who's overthinking ICM, and maybe in my case, who doesn't think about it enough? As many of you criticized several of my bust outs for not paying enough attention to ICM. And I think that those considerations make a lot of interesting, they make for a lot of interesting moments. So I want to talk a little bit about position in general. Now, anyone who's ever read any type of poker book or even talked to a poker coach for more than 30 seconds has heard something along the lines of the value of position cannot be overstated. We all know that position is so important and that you want to play more hands in position than you do out of position. Okay, this is all. How can you reconcile the idea of wanting to be in position as much as possible with the fact that everyone's min raising from late position, and then that means that we have to call from the blinds? Well, playing in the blinds means you're going to be out of position for basically the whole hand. So I think that some of us end up getting into traps because it's so enticing with these small pre-flop raises. We want to call and see a flop, but then you, after you see that flop, you have to play the rest of the hand from out of position. So one thing I would suggest is that if your decision is still somehow close between calling or folding, that you might want to just go ahead and throw those cards away, even though you might be getting intriguing or compelling pot odds suggesting otherwise. It is very hard to play from out of position, particularly against talented opponents. So depending on who opens the pot, when I'm in the blinds, I might make more folds than some of you do, believe it or not. I know my reputation is that I'm wild and loose. I know people think that about me, and that's okay. You may be surprised at some of the cards that I've thrown into the muck that many of you might have played. I mean, obviously, if you have a strong hand or a hand that can make a really strong hand, it might be worth it to go ahead and take that peel, knowing that you're going to be at a disadvantage position-wise. Likewise, when it comes to opening from early position, I think that my range is tighter than most of your computer simulators would have you play. For example, I think under the gun with a hand like King Queen of Hearts, I'm folding unless I'm at a really good table. Same with Ace Jack of Hearts. It is so hard to make money with these hands, even suited. You know, the chance that you're going to flop a flush or a flush draw, it isn't that great to make up for the fact that you're going to have a really tough decision. If you get three bet, you know, what are you supposed to do if the button decides to three bet and now you're sitting here with ace jack of hearts and he three bet small? So now you're supposed to call, or are you supposed to four bet? Even if that doesn't happen, even if nobody three bets, but you get several callers and then you flop a jack, a lot can go wrong and not that much can go right. It's hard to actually realize the value of your hand, the equity, if you will, when you are in poor position. So that's why, even though I know all the computers with their charts of, you know, opening ranges and stuff have us playing these hands from under the gun and in second position, I personally will only do that when I'm at a particularly good table. I might play almost no hands, only the very best hands, if I'm at a very tough table and I'm in early position. So just something to think about. And I think it leads us into the day six hands that I wanted to talk about. There's about 70 players remaining in the main event, and the payouts are right around 100,000, might have been 110 or so at this point. And an interesting spot came up. Ryan Yu, who was one of the chip leaders in the tournament with about 17 million in chips, So what is that? Almost 150 big blinds. M of about 60. So he's doing great, no matter how you slice it. And he opens with a hand I don't want to reveal yet. I'm going back to this, by the way. I took your feedback, guys. You guys have told me that you prefer it when I leave one hand a mystery until the end so that you don't know exactly what cards everybody has. So Ryan Yu opens to 280. The blinds were at 60 and 120 with 120 big blind ante. So he makes it 280,000, a little more than a min raise from the cutoff. And I don't want to tell you what he had, but he did have a big stack, 17 million. In the small blind, Chris Unikin with 8.5 million puts in a three bet with ace king. So he's in the small blind and three bets big to 1.35 million. So it folds all the way back to Ryan Yu, and he decides to call, even though it's a very large three bet, cost him over a million more chips to see a flop, and he does. So now there's 2.9 million in the pot. Before we talk about the flop, let's talk about this pre-flop action. Well, in this guy, Chris Unikin, he's a well-respected player. A lot of, I think the Jersey crew know him well. I think he plays at Borgata a lot. I've never actually met him, but he does have a good reputation as being a solid professional player. I think his decision to three bet with ace king obviously is non-controversial. I like his sizing. Really don't want to make it too easy when you're out of position like Chris is in this hand. You don't want to make it too easy on Ryan, our chip leader, one of the chip leaders in the tournament, but definitely by far the chip leader at this table. You don't want to give him a really easy call where he can play in position and see a flop for next to nothing. So you would think that this big three bet would price out a lot of hands. Now you think about this yourself. If you were in the small blind with ace king and someone opened to 280, how many of us actually go over four times the raise with our three bet? I mean, this is more than a pot size raise here. He's making it 1.35 million when it was only 280 to call. So I like the sizing. I hope that he would do that with all of his three bets, including a few bluffs. I think in practice, most of us have very few bluffs from the small blind after someone's raised. I don't think that many of us are able to find bluffs, maybe semi-bluffs with hands like ace five suited. I know everyone loves ace five suited, so I always use that as my example. But yeah, I would think that in Ryan Yu's shoes, I would put Uni on a very strong hand. So then when he calls, when Ryan decides to call, what should Chris be thinking? Well, one thing he should be thinking is, I three bet so big that now my SPR heading to the flop is only about 2.3. So if I flop an ace or a king, I'm pretty much going to have to go with it. Another thing he should be thinking is that Ryan had a hand that was good enough to call this big three bet, but not good enough to put in a four bet. So unless Yu has decided to slow play, he's probably got something like pocket eights, right? Maybe ace queen suited, I guess, is a possibility, although we kind of block that with our ace. I mean, I think most of his range should be middle pairs. I think he should be throwing away his smallest pairs. And I just think pocket eights is what this feels like to me. Again, I haven't revealed what his actual hand was, but I'm just trying to think through the hand in Chris's shoes, because we're playing Chris's cards here. So Chris Unikin, before this flop comes out, he's got to be thinking, well, I hope that I flop a good piece that I can pretty much commit to. And if you can beat my ace king on a king high flop, good for you. That's how I busted out of the main event, so be it. And I think that he should also be putting his opponent on something like pocket eights, possibly a suited ace queen or ace jack, maybe even tens. You know, with this big of a three bet, I don't think that Ryan would want to keep raising. I think that he probably would have just called with pocket tens as well. So we see a flop, and it comes queen of diamonds, jack of hearts, four of diamonds. And Unikin has the ace of diamonds. So although we didn't flop a pair, we have a gut shot, two overcards, and a backdoor flush draw. Now, having made this huge raise pre-flop from the small blind, and now being out of position, as I mentioned, position so important, do you think that Uni should continue? We took the lead pre-flop. That doesn't necessarily mean we have to continuation bet here. Do we have enough to start putting more chips into this pot? My answer is yes. We can do the down bet. We only have about 6.8 million in our stack, and there's already 2.9 million in the pot. So there's the SPR 2.3 there. This pot is well worth fighting for. And I think that if we want to bluff target those pocket eights, pocket sevens type of hands, maybe just down betting here to something like 1 million should usually get the job done, I believe. And in Chris's shoes, especially holding that ace of diamonds, I think that's the type of bet I would make here. We can bet and then fold if we're raised, because I think a raise would usually be ace queen or better. It's unlikely that that raise would happen with a semi bluff, because we have the ace of diamonds, so any ace high flush draw is out of the question. King 10 would be open-ended, but I really doubt that Ryan Yu is loose enough to call with King 10 when we made such a big 3-bet pre-flop. So what draws does he have? 10-9 should have been folded already. So I think that if we bet and get raised, it's either a pure bluff, like a zero equity bluff with a hand like sevens. I think sevens, if they raise here or shove on us, would probably think I'm turning my sevens into a bluff. Or it's ace queen or a set of jacks. Those are the only hands that would make sense. So in other words, I don't expect that my flop bet would be raised very often, even if I down bet to 1 million. This way we keep the lead in the hand, don't allow Ryan Yu to outplay us with his big stack, and still set ourselves up for a shove on the turn should we happen to make the nuts with a 10 or pick up a flush draw with any diamond. I think where things get a little hairy is if we now flop an ace or a king after having been called on the flop. I always like, as I mentioned last week, I like to be cautious when I make one pair on the turn, especially if a flop bet gets called. You don't know if that king is actually going to be good or not because he called you on the flop with something. So anyway, I think there's not much downside to betting, especially when we can continue to barrel on so many turns. But Chris decides to check, and I have to be honest, I respect Chris Unikin a lot. I've been told by a number of pros that he's a very good player. I just don't understand why he gave up on this hand like this. Unless he was going for some kind of check raise, but it's very uncommon for the player who got 3-bet to bluff on the flop when the 3-better checks to him. It's just not a line you see very much. Chris is supposed to have a very strong range, making it 1.35 after I raised to 280. Uni should have a big hand here. So just because he checks doesn't mean that Ryan's going to automatically bet. And from having watched Ryan Yu play for many hours here on PokerGo, he hasn't really been out of line. He's gotten this chip lead very cautiously, actually. He hasn't been a big gambler. So I think when Chris checks here, he shouldn't be doing so assuming that Ryan will always bet. I mean, I know that from a GTO standpoint, you want to have some checks in your range. You want to be able to check some strong hands as well as some weak hands. I just don't think that the ace king with the ace of diamonds is a good candidate to put into that checking range. I think ace king with no diamond would be fine to check and usually fold if Ryan makes any kind of serious bet at all. But having the ace of diamonds here, I think, is enough for me with my two overcards, a gut shot and a backdoor flush draw. That's a pretty robust holding for the situation, especially when we can usually put our opponent on a hand like pocket eights. There's no reason not to put in a million and see if you can take it down. I'm not a fan of this decision. And Ryan checks behind. So now we're going to see a turn. There's still 2.9 million in the pot. What do we make of Ryan's check back? I think it looks like it's probably still in that pocket eights, pocket nines, pocket tens, maybe pocket sevens, probably not sixes or worse. But it really feels like a pocket pair that's just trying to get to showdown. And it looks like Chris wants to let him do that. So we check, check, and the turn is the eight of spades. Now, I've mentioned pocket eights like 40 times. So now, of course, when you see the eight, it's less likely now that Ryan Yu has exactly that. He could still have pocket nines, pocket tens. The problem for Chris is that it's now going to be hard to convince Ryan that we have a big hand. When you have an SPR of 2.3 and you don't bet the flop, it looks like you are trying to control the pot and not commit. Most of the time, when you have this type of stack to pot ratio, you should be trying to get some of those chips in so that you can get the rest of those chips in, unless you don't want to get any of those chips in, as is the case here with Uni. So his hand is basically face up to me. In Ryan's shoes, I would be able to put Chris on pretty much exactly what he has. Pocket tens, possibly, but most likely an ace king, especially with that big three bet preflop. So when the turn comes, the eight of hearts, Chris really has no choice now. The ace of spades, not that it matters. But now our board is queen, jack, four, eight, with two diamonds. I don't think Chris can really credibly bet here. I guess he might do that with pocket queens, pocket jacks, possibly. But to me, the missed opportunity was on the flop. Instead, we have to check now here on the turn. And I like this play, actually, by Chris. If you don't bet the flop, you can't bet the turn. And Ryan fires 1.2 million into 2.9 million. So now Uni's getting a pretty good price. I mean, he still has two overcards and a gut shot, as many as 10 clean outs. He could be drawing dead to four outs, I guess. Seems unlikely, unless he actually did turn the three eights. So probably at least some of our 10 outs are live, anywhere from 7 to 10. I would call it, on average, at least 8 outs here. So I think this should be a call from Chris. The problem is he doesn't have that many chips. He can't really afford to be splashing around. But Ryan has made it quite cheap. You know, only betting 1.2, offering almost 4 to 1 on a call. Having this many outs, I think you have to call, getting 4 to 1. So Chris makes another play that I don't like. He folds here. I think Ryan should bet more. And if he doesn't bet more, Chris needs to punish that by making the call. Instead, Chris lays it down and Ryan wins the hand with ace of hearts, 10 of clubs. All right, so let's talk about Ryan's play in this hand now that we know he had ace 10. I think that his call pre-flop is pretty bad, to be honest. I know he has position. Ace 10 is just so... Ace 10 is in terrible shape against Chris Unikin's pre-flop 3-betting to 1.35 million range. Uni's a good player, but he's basically tight, and especially in the few hours that I got to watch him play, he has been very tight. He hasn't been stepping out, putting in a lot of bluffs. He hasn't been Honestly, all that creative. He seems like he's trying to play a smart, steady game, try to accumulate chips when he can, stay out of trouble. He hasn't exactly been Michael Dyer from last year's main event. Actually, no one has played the role of Michael Dyer in this year's main event, from what I've been watching. So I just think that Chris's three betting range is such a tight range. It's like ace king, maybe pocket tens and on up. And against that range, and probably ace queen, and maybe once in a while, an ace five suited type hands just to so that Chris has a few bluffs. But honestly, I think at this point in the main event, I don't think players are actually worrying that much about making sure they have bluffs in their range. I think that people are scared about losing in 77th place and missing out on the millions at the final table. And I don't think players are as perfectly balanced as the computers would say they should be. So with that in mind, I think Ace 10 is a fold. In Ryan's shoes, if you're making a bad laydown, it's the one time out of 20 that your hand was good. And the real problem for Ryan is Ace 10 just doesn't flop that well. What is he hoping to hit on the flop? Is he even going to be happy? What if it flops 10 high and then Chris bets the pot on the flop? What are we just going to double the guy up because we flop top top? I don't know. It just feels like a pretty easy fold to me. In Ryan's shoes, I would not have continued and put in that extra million plus just to see a flop with Ace 10. I like Ryan's decision to check it back on the flop because, as I mentioned, there is some chance that Uni is going for a weird check raise on the flop, even though he was the pre-flop aggressor, the three better. It's not impossible for him to have flopped a monster and then be looking to check raise it with something like pocket queens on queen jack four. It's a pretty small part of Uni's range, in my opinion, but still, I think in Ryan's shoes, there's no reason to bet his gut shot. Might as well just check it back and hope to see a king on the turn. Now, on the turn, Ryan picks up a double gutter with the eight of spades. So he can win now with a nine or a king. And that's assuming ace 10 is no good and that he can't win with a 10 or an ace. So he has some number of outs that's kind of hard for him to ascertain at the moment, but he knows he has at least four outs to the nuts, the four kings, and then probably four other good outs with the nines. Although if Uni somehow shows up with king 10, which we block, I mean, of course, that other straight is not the nuts per se, but for all intents and purposes, Ryan should be thrilled to see a nine or a king on the river. And now the main thing is when Uni has now checked twice, having three bet pre-flop, he's basically telling us, look, I have either pocket tens or ace king. And so Ryan makes a good decision to bet, but again, I don't like his sizing because he essentially prices Chris in with his small bet of 1.2. Now, Uni can't know that he can't win this pot with a king. It's very hard to put Ryan on ace 10 because he shouldn't really have that hand in his range for calling pre-flop. But Chris knows for sure that he has some number of outs. And betting 1.2 to me is a mistake by Ryan. I think 1.6, 1.7 gets the job done and makes the call that much worse for Chris, especially if I'm not planning on paying off on the river, which I'm definitely not unless my hand improves. So in other words, if Chris decides to check call the turn and then lead the river, when he gets there, he's not really going to be able to make any money. And so because of that, I'm not a fan of this sizing. I think it should be a little bit bigger. So as we were talking through the hand, how many of you were putting Ryan on ace 10 offsuit? I guess that's one advantage to making these kind of questionable calls is that it is hard to put you on a hand that you should not have in your calling range. But certainly whatever value there is in that deception is not worth the cost of playing with a lesser holding in an inflated 3-bet pot. Let me know what you think. Twitter is the way to go. Use Twitter, @ClaytonComic. Let me know what you think of this hand. Let me know what you think of the World Series of Poker schedule. Are you starting to get excited as I am? It may seem ridiculous to some of you to be sitting here in January looking at the schedule that doesn't even begin until after Memorial Day, but that's the kind of guy I am. The thing I look forward to the most each and every year is the World Series of Poker. So I start looking at the schedule piece by piece as they release it, one little bit at a time. Then I'll check the Wynn schedule and the Venetian schedule and make my schedule for the summer, which I never, ever follow. Because, as most of you know, I don't like to play unless I feel like playing. But I like to have some idea of at least a game plan for what I'll be doing when I get out there. So yeah, I make no apologies about it. I love the WSOP and I love a summer of poker. And I hope you do too. If you are interested in sharpening your poker game in advance of the Wynn Signature Series next week or any other tournament series, including the value menu list that the WSOP released this week, the best way to do it that I know of is tournamentpokeredge.com. You can head over there for as little as $25 a month, guys. You can have full access to all of our coaches' videos, all of our forums, and everything else that there is to offer. TPE University. We're talking Colin Moshman, a recent daddy, by the way. Congratulations, Colin. Andrew Brokus, my hero. The Assassinato, Alexander Fitzgerald, Daryl Jace, Casey Jarzabek, on and on and on. And you get them all for as little as $25 a month with your paid annual subscription. Visit tournamentpokeredge.com for more. So for everyone here at TPE, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Hope to see you in Vegas. And thank you all so much for listening.
In Texas, please fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. I love it. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Gambling is fun when you're with me.
I love it.
Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun, fun.
Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa.
I'll get her heart, show her what I got.
Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa.
I'll get her heart, show her what I got.
She can't read my poker face. She